Ervin Dafnan, hey, we are in an Amud Aleph towards the top of the Amud at the two dots. We are going to beginning with the words Tana Rabbanan, and we go all the way back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah here at the beginning of the fifth parak of Ervin describes for us exactly how to create a border around a city that's in a regular shape. Anything that is not rectangular or square is considered an irregular shape. A city with an irregular shape, so one is allowed to square out that city. And that serves as a leniency in terms of establishing a border of a city. So that means to say that there, if there's any protrusion in the city, or for that matter, if the city is circular in shape, so one is allowed now to create a square around whatever protrusion that may be, or if it's the city's circle, so then one can create a square around the circle, and thereby, even before beginning with the measuring of tchum, so one is already going to have a city border that is going to be somewhat extended from where the city border actually is. So this is the idea of extending the city border, and that is our parak. Our parak opened up back on and Beis Amud Beis with the words Ketzad Ma'abrim Esa'arim, how exactly do we extend the city and the borders of the city? And we had a lengthy discussion in the Gemara, both on Daf Nun Gimel and on the Dalet. The Gemara went off on a bit of a tangent. It started off with the fact that our Mishnah used the words Ma'abrim. Question becomes whether or not it's with an ayin or with an aleph. Is it ebor like pregnancy, or is it aver like a limb, like an extremity? And that caused the Gemara a long tangent that extended both for dapim and gimel and nandal. But here in an ayin and aleph, at the two dots, we're going to go back to our Mishnah, and we're going to be discussing some more details regarding the extending of the borders of the city. Tanur Rabbanan, we start with a brisa. A brisa over here is going to give us numerous examples of various situations of constructs of a city in which one is allowed to extend its border. So Ketzam Abrim is Arim. So how exactly are we going to be able to extend the border of a city? Aruka Kamoshi. So if it is rectangular in shape, so then it is as it is. You cannot extend that, as that now is considered a regular shape. Agula, what if the shape of the city is circular? Osin lo Zavios. So then what you could do is you can make a square around the circle, as we have already described a number of times. Mirubaas, if let's say the shape of the city is square, ain osin lo zavios, so then you can't make corners for such a city. Seems to be an extraordinarily obvious point. And on top of that, the first case in the brisa that we just dealt with is talking about where the city was rectangular. Why would we have thought that if the city was, instead of being rectangular, be square, that'd be any different? So the Gemara is going to ask that question, so we're going to wait for the Gemara to ask and answer that question. Let's say the shape of the city was a little bit more of a trapezoid shape. Wide on one side, narrow on the other side. So at that point in time, now we can look at both sides being the same. Meaning what we're going to do is we're going to square so that the shorter side now gets wider, so that it now has perfect 90-degree angles on all four sides. And obviously this is going to create more extension for the shorter side, so that it matches the longer side. Let's say there's a house that is going to just jut out a little bit from the city. If it's jutting out on one side or jutting out on two sides, row no soki ilu chut masuach alayem umodeid mimenu ulaalan apayim ama. So I'm sorry. Before we get to the umodeid mimenu. So then what you can do is that you can have now a line being drawn from the extended house or the extended two houses. And in doing so, now once again, we're going to have an extension of the border of the city. And so that as a result of that, now, even before measuring tchum, the border of the city is already going to be extended. Now, umodid mimenu ula'alan apayim ama. And now from there, it's where we're going to be starting to measure tchum. And in terms of how exactly we're going to mention measuring tchum, so let's hold off on that discussion, as that is going to be coming up a little bit later on in this parak. But in the meantime, however, these are all different various examples regarding how to extend the border of a city. Haisa asuya kimin keshes o kimin gam. Now, before concluding with the brisa is going to end off with the following case. Let's say the shape of the city is either looking like a rainbow. That means to say that the layout of the city actually shaped like a rainbow, or kimin gam, or it is basically looking like an L bracket. Gam from the Greek letter gamma. Rono soki iluhi malea batim v'chateros. So therefore, the interior of that area, in the case of the rainbow, the interior of the rainbow, or in the case of the bracket, the interior of the bracket. So we're going to be looking at it as if it was filled up with houses and courtyards. And it's only from there going forward do we start measuring the tchum. Amar Mar. After I now, having concluded the Braisa, the Gemara is going to go over the various cases that were brought up together in the Braisa and see what chidushim we could see from each one of the cases. So Aruka Kamoshi Hipshita. So we're going to start off with the first case of the Braisa, and that is that it is the rectangular, and that's it. And you can't do anything with it. And so the Gemara says, Lotzricha Darichu Katina. So the Gemara says, here's the Havamina. Havamina would have been that, considering that we're talking about a rectangular, so a rectangle by definition is going to have a short side and a long side. That's the very definition of a rectangle. Now, Ma Detema Litin La Pusya A Orka Kamash Malan. I might have thought as follows. What we could suggest is that maybe over here we're going to square the rectangle. That means to say that we're going to take the long side and we're going to give the length of the long side over to the short side, meaning that we're going to extend the short side so that it matches the length of the long side. And so basically what we're going to do is we're going to square the rectangle, giving an extension to the shorter side, so then that now we are going to give it a buffer, a bumper, so to say, of enough to the short side so that it's going to match the long side. In other words, it's going to look like a square. That's the Havamina one would have thought. So the Gemara says, Kamash Lan, the Chiddush is that we're not going to do that. Now the Gemara is going to skip over here the case of the circle, as the case of the circle is pretty self-evident in terms of what the Chiddush is. The city is shaped like a circle, and the fact that you can draw a square around it, that's a Chiddush. The Gemara doesn't really need to discuss it. The Gemara does not discuss it. Then we move on to the next case of the Braisa, Meruva Asinos and Lozavios. So the next case of the Braisa, the third case of the Braisa, is that which the case of the square. The city is shaped like a square. Under those circumstances, the Braisa told us that I can't square the square, which, if you think about it now, what's the Chiddush over there? Of course you can't square the square. So Pshita Lotzricha de Marva Vlamarva Birivua Olam. So the Gemara says, yes, it's true that the shape of the city is that of a square. However, its orientation is not due north, due south, due east, due west, meaning that the flat side of each side of the square is facing in a direction perfect with an eastern, western, northern, and southern horizon. But rather, it's tilted a little bit on its axis. And so therefore, Ma'od Detema Lira'a Birivua Olam Kamash Malan. So the Havamina would have been that under those circumstances, what you could do now is that you could draw an imaginary line squaring the square, where what we're going to do is that we're going to create a square that matches perfectly with due north, due south, due east, due west, and that obviously will now extend a certain amount of area of the square as we are drawing a square basically hitting the points of the square, of the interior square that's off its axis. That's all the Havamin and the Maskan is, no, that we don't do that. The squaring is done when it's in a regular shape, meaning that we'll square a circle, or we'll square a trapezoid, or if there's a protrusion coming out of the city, so that will get squared. But if the shape of the city is already squared, so then even though it's not on the axis, nevertheless, we're not going to square that city. The Gemara now is quoting the next case of the Braisa, and that is, I have a house that is jutting out of the city. So what we can do now is that we can create an extension by squaring off that area. So the Gemara's question is as follows. Now at this point in time, the Gemara's thought process is like this. When we have a house that's extending outside the city, the case of the two houses is where the second house is extending on the same side as the first house. And so the Gemara's question now, if that's true, Gemara's question now makes a lot of sense. If we're going to be extending the border of the city for one house, which means to say now that we're going to be drawing a line going, a cutting across now that extended house all the way across and back down now to the city. So if there are two houses which are creating borders actual brackets for the borders, so then of course we're going to draw an imaginary line going across that. That's much less of a chiddush. And so once I know the chiddush of one house, so the case of two houses seems to be totally unnecessary. So the Gemara's answer is, Lotzricha Mishtei Ruchos. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you misunderstood the case of the two houses. The case of the two houses is that the second house is not extending out on the same side as the first house, but rather on a different side of the city altogether. So now what we're doing when we're squaring the city is that we're actually creating two different extensions, a separate extension for each of the houses that are jutting out. This idea of squaring is such a radical idea, it's such a novel idea, I might have thought that it would have been limited only to one side, and maybe the Havamina would have been that I wouldn't be able to do it for a second side. And the Chiddush is, no, that we're going to be doing it for a second side as well. Now the Gemara quotes the case of the Brisa regarding the case of the rainbow and the bracket. And the Gemara now is going to be discussing this case, specifically the case of the rainbow. Amar Rav Huna, Ir Hasuya Kekeshes. If I have a city that is shaped like a rainbow, Im Yesh Ben Shnei Rashi Pachos, Me Arba Zalafim Ama, Modedin La Min HaYeser. Vim Lav Modedin La Min HaKeshes. So the statement of Rav Huna basically is to be understood like this. Now this is really much easier to be seen if you could look at it visually. If you have a picture in front of you of the city that looks like a rainbow, so it'll just be much easier to understand as I'm attempting now to describe it. We basically now have an imaginary bowstring going along the bottom of our rainbow city. In other words, I'm assuming that the bow is bent downward so that the two ends of the city are facing downward. And those under those circumstances now, we have a bowstring, an imaginary bowstring on the bottom. And what the Brisa taught us is this idea that we can view the entire interior area of the rainbow, of this rainbow city, as if it's filled up. And so therefore, Tchum is only going to be measured from the bowstring and onward. What Rav Huna is introducing is this idea that we will say that, but only under the circumstances where the two ends of the city are within 4,000 amas of one another. If they are within 4,000 amas of one another, so then one would be able to access the entire interior area of the bow. Because on Shabbos, obviously, you are capped in terms of walking. You can only walk to 2,000 amas. And so that means to say now that if the area between the two ends of the city are within 4,000 amas, that means that entire interior area is an area that's accessible to all the members of the city. Rav Huna says, however, on the other hand, if let's say the distance between the two ends of the city is greater than 4,000 amas, so now we are looking at area that's within the bow that is inaccessible, and therefore Rav Huna says that cannot be annexed to the city, and that is not going to be considered part and parcel of the city. The Gemara, after having quoted this halacha Rav Huna, so Umi Amar Rav Huna Hacha, the Gemara says, yeah, but let's compare this with another statement that was made by Rav Huna, and the Gemara over here quotes. V'amar Rav Huna, we are three lines from the bottom on Nun Hey Amud Aleph. Chomas Eir Shenifritza B'me'a V'arbim B'achas V'shlish. So Amar Rav Bar Ula Lok. I'm sorry, that's already the answer. Let's understand this second statement of Rav Huna. And that is, I have the following. I have a wall of a city that gets breached. And that means to say that we had a whole city, and then somewhere within the middle of the city, a breach occurs, where now basically we have a gap that's created in the middle of the city. And what Rav Huna teaches us is, as long as the gap is within 141 and a third amma one of the other, so then we could still view this city as a unified city. And that means to say that the tchum of the people living on the east side of the city does not can go to the west side, and their tchum doesn't even begin until after the west side, and the same thing is true in the other direction as well. Simply put, as long as the gap is under 141 and a third, so the city is considered a unified city. Anything greater than that is going to be considered a divided city, and so therefore they're going to have to be viewed as two different cities, and therefore when you're living on the east side, your tchum begins once you get to that gap. And the same thing is true when living on the west side. Your tchum begins once you get to the gap. Now, if you put that statement against the statement that we had regarding our rainbow city is effectively a divided city. Meaning, don't look at the top of the rainbow, but look at the bottom of the rainbow. And look at the two ends of the rainbow. And basically, if you're just focusing on the bottom portion, you're basically looking at two divided cities. And what kind of gap are we talking about? A significant gap, one of almost 4,000 amos. So now you can understand why the Gemara seems to be bothered. Because what we have over here is a discrepancy where in the case of the United City that was divided, so there we were talking of an allowable gap of only 141 and a third amma. And by the way, the specific nature of that number we're going to be discussing momentarily. Meanwhile, in the case of the Rainbow City, so we're allowing a gap of up to 4,000 amas. That is a tremendous discrepancy. So Amar Rav Bar Ula Lo Kasha Kam Beruchacha Kam Shtei Ruchos. You probably already intuited the answer, and that is a difference, a huge difference to be made regarding the Rainbow City versus the divided city. The divided city is totally divided. Meaning, even though at one point in time it was united, now it was divided, and the division went cut through all the way from the bottom to the top. Meaning that we are literally have now two separate cities, totally fragmented one from the other. Under those circumstances, now the allowable gap is only going to be 141 and a third. In the case of the rainbow, however, it is not two cities, meaning it is a wide opening on the bottom, but on the top it's connected. And so therefore the cases are incomparable. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, fine, the answer is wonderful, but let me understand now this case of the city that was once together and now divided. And the Gemara says, so basically, here's what we're learning together. That in the case now where the city is divided, so we're going to be giving a karfa flizu for karfa flizu. Now, this idea of a karfaf, we already discussed extensively back in the second parak of Erevin, but as the Gemara discusses it over here, even though it's the same word, it does not mean the same thing. A karfaf over here is a description of basically a buffer to a city, an extension of a city. And that means to say it's as follows. We're going to see in just a moment the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to bring down a machlokas. But right now, we're assuming, like the Shita of the Chachamim, and that is that if I have two cities that are within proximity to one another, as long as they are within a karfaf of one another, we could view these two cities as one city. That's the idea of karfaf in terms of unifying two cities. Basically, the karfaf is an area outside the city that can still be considered part and parcel of the city. So, what the Gemara now is bothered by is the fact that Rav Huna, in the case of the city that was once united, now divided, and now is separate into two separate parts, so as long as it's 141 and a third of one another, so then we can view them as one unified city. Anything greater than that, we can't. And what Rav Huna is basically teaching me is the halacha of karfaf. And the Gemara says, and we knew that halacha already based on the Mishnah. Did not. We are going to be seeing this Mishnah coming up in a couple of days. This is coming up on Nun Zion. Nosin karfaf liyur, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rav Meir is of the opinion that you give a karfaf to a city. Now, Rav Meir's understanding of the concept of karfaf, which we're going to be discussing in more detail back, but later on Daphne and Zion, is the idea that when I have a city, so I don't start measuring Tchum until after the Karfaf. Karfaf is 70 and two-thirds Amma, so we only start measuring Tchum after Karfaf. That's Rav Meir Shita. That's not the one we're focusing on right now. We're going to be focusing on the Shita later on Daphne and Zion. In the meantime, we're going to be focusing on the Shita of the Chachamim. V'chachamim Omrim, lo amru Karfaf, elo ben shtei ayaros. So Karfaf has nothing to do with when we start counting Tchum. According to the Chachamim, we start counting Tchum immediately after the border of a city. But rather, according to the Chachamim, the idea of Karfaf is that after two cities that are within a Karfaf of one another, those two cities can be viewed as one city. Now, when we say a Karfaf between the two cities, what do we mean by that? The Itmar, on that there's a Machlokas Amarayim. Rav Huna, Amar Karfaf Luzu, Vakarfaf Luzu. Rav Huna says, a Karfaf for each city, which means take the 70 and two-thirds and the 70 and two-thirds, add them together, and you get to 141 and a third. And by the way, that explains why we were so specific about the number of the cities having to be 141 and a third of one another. V'chia bar Rav Amar, enosin ela karfaf echa l'shneim. And according to Chia bar Rav, it is only one karfaf between the two of them. Then and only then is it going to be considered a unified city. Anything greater than 70 two-thirds is not considered a unified city. Here's our problem. We now have Rav Huna commenting on the Mishnah in Zion that says that when I have a city that is within 141 and a third of one another, so then these cities can be viewed as one singular city connected. Meanwhile, Rav Huna basically said the same thing regarding a city that was once together, now divided, as long as it's within 141 and a third, so then it's going to be considered one unified city. And the Gemara is bothered by the redundant nature of Rav Huna having to repeat what seems to be the same halacha two times over. Tzricha, the Gemara's answer is that in both cases it's necessary. Rav Huna needed to teach it to us on both occasions. Why? In the case of the one city that was once united, so there could be grounds to be more makel because it was once upon a time one city. But in the case where they were two cities constructed individually, one of the other, so I might have thought that we wouldn't have been so mekel. And in the case of the two cities, I would have thought that over there, there's not much that can be done between these two cities, and as a result of that, so we could view these two cities as one unified city. But over here, where there really isn't that much in terms of interruption of activity between the two cities. These cities were once together, and now a breach occurs between these two cities, I might have thought that we're not really interrupting with the gap in between them. So MLO, I might have thought, therefore, that the breach of 141 and a third is not going to be significant. So therefore, tzricha, so therefore, both cases are in fact necessary. The kamei have ben yeser lekeshes. The Gemara now is going back to the case of the rainbow, and the Gemara is going to be discussing another aspect of the rainbow city, and that's the following. We so far have discussed the distance between the two ends of the rainbow, where it has to be less than 4,000 amas one or the other, so that way I could access the entire interior area of the rainbow. The Gemara now wants to know, what about from the top of the bow all the way down to the what would be the imaginary bowstring? So is there any cap in terms of that? So the Gemara, interestingly enough, has a discussion / argument about this. Rava bar Ravuna amar alpayim amah. According to Rava bar Ravuna, it can't exceed 2,000 amas. So if I'm measuring from the top of the bow to the imaginary bowstring, if it's 2,000 amas or less, so then we could view the entire interior as in the next section of the Rainbow City. Otherwise, we cannot view it as the next portion of the Rainbow City. And Rava bar Ravuna amar afili yesem alpayim amah. And according to Rava, son of Rava bar Ravuna, it could be even more than 2,000 amas, meaning the distance from the top of the bow to the imaginary bowstring can go well beyond 2,000 amas, and still, we're going to say that the entire interior area is just a next area. Amar Rabbi Kavasa de Rava, Bered de Rava bar Ravuna, Mistabra, this latter position, says Abaye, seems to be much more logical. The Ibaye Hadar Ase Derech Batim. Because consider, as we already got done explaining, in terms of getting to the end of the city, if you're at either bottoms of the city, so you'd be able to access the interior, because as we already established, it is within 4,000 amos, one end to the other end, and so therefore all that area, even though you can't access it to it from the top, but nevertheless, once you get to the bottom, you would be able to access it. So the argument that Abaye says is that as long as it's accessible from one part of the city, so therefore it can be considered part and parcel of the city, and therefore it is in fact going to be annexed to the city. So Abaye just simply says that this latter position, the more lenient position, seems to be also the more reasonable position. Hayisham gududiyos gavosas ar tfachim. The Gemara now is going to be talking about the various structures that are mentioned in the Mishnah that are going to be serving as points of annexation. If you go back to the Mishnah noted a number of structures that when they are jutting out of the city are going to be able to add and extend it to the city. So one of the things that was mentioned, it was actually the third thing mentioned in the Mishnah. Mishnah mentioned houses, Mishnah mentioned towers, that's the pagum, and then the Mishnah mentions the gedudios. So what exactly is that? That's going to be our Gemara's discussion here as we are in the middle of Nunhei Amud Beis. So gedudios, the Gemara says, what exactly is that? My gedudios? So Amar Rav Yehuda Shalosh Mechitza Sheinalan Tikra. So it is the ruins of a house. Three walls are remaining, and it does not have a roof on top. Ibai Lahu. Gemara's question: Shtei Mechitzas V'Yeshlem Tikra Mahu. What if it's got two walls, but it has a roof on top? So would that qualify as something which would be an extender? So Tanu Rabbanan. Sorry, Tashma. The Gemara says, come in here. The Gemara now is going to be quoting a lengthy brisa, and at one point in the brisa, the brisa is going to seem to be referencing Argududios, not exactly by that name, but it's going to make a reference to it, and we're going to try to extrapolate from the Brisa. So we get to see the entire Brisa. Elu Shemit Abrim, Imam. And first, the Brisa is going to give us a list of things that do, in fact, qualify as an extender of the city. And they are Nefesh Ishbar Arba Amos Al Arba Amos. Nefesh over here, some sort of structure. Presumably, it was connected with a cemetery. That's what we said back in the Mishnah. Rashi over here writes a similar point. Rashi writes, Binyan Al Hakever. Ustam ledira shomer hakever avid. And Rashi says that also it's used by a shomer. You're going to get the sense from Rashi after going through all these cases of the Mishnah and reading Rashi, we're not going to go through every Rashi inside, that all these structures that are serving as extenders to the city, so they all have to have some sort of utility for humans, meaning that they have to be a structure that is used by humans. So as long as it's 4x4 amos and gesher, and also the same thing with the bridge, vahakever, or a cemetery, Beis HaKvaros, Sheyesh Bahen Beis Dira, where it's got some sort of housing for, we're going to say over here it's for a guard. In other words, nobody's living over there in the cemetery, and even by the bridge, it's just basically an area for the guard. So Uveza Kanesha Sheshba Beis Dira, Lechazan. Same thing with a shul that has a house for the gabai. Chazan over here, as the Gemara makes reference to it, is really a gabai. And Beis Avodas Kochem Sheshba Beis Dira Lechomrim. Also a house of Avodah Zarah, where as long as there's a place for a priest to live. And yes, this of course is very interesting, that we could basically use the base of Avodah Zarah as a way of extending the city. And I'm just curious, the Gemara is not bothered by it, but it's certainly a curiosity that by using this building as an extender for the city, so the truth of the matter is that we're really benefiting from it, as now we're getting an extension for the city. In other words, our tchum gets to get extended based on this base of Avodah Zarah. Okay, and generally speaking, when it comes to Avodah Zarah, it's also Brahana. Okay, so I don't know. The Bryce is not bothered by it. The Gemara is not bothered by it, but okay. Anyway, we move on. These different types of silos and storehouses, but as long as it has a Beis Dira, as long as it has somewhere where somebody lives there, or we have some sort of hut, or a house in the ocean. That definitely needs clarification. The Gemara is going to clarify exactly what that is. All these cases, Hare Elam et Abri Mima, all these houses are going to be serving as extenders to the city. So that means that if any of these structures are actually jutting out, extending out of the city, so then it's going to create an entire extension for the city, as we're going to be able to square the area, like we described already at the beginning of the daf. And now we're going to go over the contrast. And we're going to look at similar type structures that are not going to be extenders for the city. And here's the list. Nefesh and Ifrit Samishtei Ruchoseha. If, let's say, we had a building where two of the walls were knocked down, Eilech Ve'Eilech, Ve'agesh Ve'akevesh Ein Lahem Beis Dira, or if I have a bridge or a cemetery where there's no guardhouse, Ubeis HaKnesset Shein La Beis Dira L'Chazan, or if we have a shul where there's no house for the Gabbai, Ubeis HaVodos Kochem Shein La Beis Dira L'Komrim, or if we have a Beis HaVodos Zara where there is no house for the priest, Ve'ha'oravos Ve'atzaros She'Besodos Shein Lahem Beis Dira, or let's say we have these silos, but there is no guardhouse. Or if, let's say, we have any kind of cistern well or cave, or a fence, or a house on the boat, that's the contrast of Bayesh Beyam. So, Ein Elu Mit Abrim Ima. So, these are all non-residential houses. And when I say residential, it seems to be that the definition over here, it's even less than residential. In other words, we're talking about facilities where there's not even a guardhouse for anybody. So these are just storage facilities, so they're not going to be considered extenders to the city. Adkan Divrei HaBraisa, that gets us through a number of cases mentioned in the Braisa over here. Why did we quote the Braisa? Because in the Braisa, in the first thing mentioned on the list of things that are not extenders, Katani Miat, Nefesh and Nifritza Mishtei Ruchoseha, Eilech Ve'Eilech. We're talking about a building where two of the walls fell down, and that's not going to be extender. My love, the Ika Tikra. Now, the Gemara assumes that it has a roof on top, and if that assumption is correct, so then we just concluded that when I have a ruins of a house where two of the walls are remaining, and even if it has a roof on top, so it cannot be an extender to the city, that would be the conclusion. But the Gemara says, but that's an assumption, and the Braisa doesn't say that. Lo, de Leika Tikra. The Gemara says it could just simply be talking about a case where it does not have a roof on top, and under those circumstances, it's not going to be an extender. But Lu Yitzu, but had it had a roof on top, so then in fact could be an extender. Bayesh Beyam Lamai Chazei. Now, of the list of things that could serve as an extender, so one of them is a Bayesh Beyam. That's a house in the ocean. And what is that? Meaning, it's hard to understand how is that going to be an extender to a city. So Lamai Chazei. So the Gemara says, what does that mean exactly? Or what does it fit for? So Amar Papa Bayesh Asu Lefanos Bo Kelim Shvisfina. It is a house where it is used to put the utensils from the boat, meaning to say that once the boat is docked, so the equipment of the boat is going to go into this house, and this kind of house can be an extender for the city. Okay, and I guess we're going to have to add, although the Gemara does not make this point clear, that in to a certain degree, it also has some sort of guardhouse to it, or there must be some sort of use by people for such a house. Otherwise, it is hard to understand because then it just simply sounds like some sort of silo, which the Gemara said if it's just a silo, it's not going to work. Okay. Anyway, Uma'ara in mit'aberes ima. So the Gemara says, now as far as the cave is concerned, a cave cannot be used as an extender for the city. V'atani, Rabbi Chiya ma'ara mit'aberes ima. The Gemara says, okay, but I have a braisa that says that a cave can be used as an extender. So Amar Abai, kishyesh binyan al piya. So the Gemara says, well, no, the cave over here that was described in that second braisa is talking about where there was already a house connected to the cave. So the Gemara says, wow, if there's a house connected to the cave, v'tei b'lei mishum binyan gufei. So then the house itself should serve as the extender. Then what does the cave even help over here? So lo tzricha lehashlim. So the Gemara says, well, the house in of itself is really small. And as we learned, in order to be an extender for a city, so the house has to have a minimum of 4x4 amos. The house in question over here is really small. However, the house opens up into a cave. When I take the house and the cave, the collective total area is going to be 4x4. And the chiddush is that under those circumstances, that could serve it as an extender to the city. Amar Rav Huna, Yoshei Tzrifim, Ein Modedin Lahen, Ela Mipesach Ba'Deihim. So we're going to talk now about people living in huts, actually communities of people living in huts. Under those circumstances, the Brisa teaches us that the, Rav Huna teaches us that these people cannot view their city as a city, in that their tchum begins right at the front door. And they cannot view their city as a unified area where the tchum begins only after the city. So Mesa Rav Chisda, so Rav Chisda says, wait one second. Let's consider a group of people that were living in tents. And what better time to talk about this than on Sukkos? But let's talk about a group of people living in tents. And that is Vayechanu al Yardim, Beis HaYishimos. So over here, a description of the Jewish people living in their tents, otherwise known as our time spent in the midbar. Now, ve'amar Rav Abba Bar Chana, amar Rav Yochanan didich azileihu asra v'havei talsei parsei al talsei parsei. Now, it happens to be that the Torah describes one of the areas in which they traveled is the Beis HaYishimos. So we now know that the entire encampment of the Jewish people covered this area. How much is this area? So Rav Abba Bar Chana has a tradition. He saw that the area is 3 parsa by 3 parsa. Every parsa is 4 mil. So we're talking about 12 mil by 12 mil. That is the total encampment of the Jewish people. V'tanya kishein nifnim, ein nifnim lelufnim v'lelitzidim, elalacharem. And on top of that, we have a braisa that describes what it was like to go to the bathroom in the midbar. Just as a curiosity, we have a general tradition that as far as the man is concerned, the man was totally digested, and there was no waste material of the man, so seemingly there was never a need to go to the bathroom. Okay, doesn't bother me so much. In other words, the idea that there was a need to go to the bathroom, even in the midbar. The braisa here assumes that there was a need to go to the bathroom. And if they need to go to the bathroom, so where do they go to the bathroom? So, to be discreet and to be hygienic, so they went to the bathroom in the back of the camp, meaning whatever direction they were walking is considered the front, so they had to walk to the back. Now, the question, let's formulate the Gemara's question over here, because the Gemara, in putting all this information together, is asking a question, and that is as follows. We have now identified the Jewish people's encampment as being really large, right? 12 mil by 12 mil, right? And we also said that anyone who lives in hut is not considered a city. And we also said that anyone who needed to go to the bathroom had to go to the back of the camp, which means that in theory, you can have someone who, with the need to relieve themselves, who has to make a 12-mil hike. Now, I understand in of itself, by the way, that's kind of hard to even imagine that that's what he's going to have to do in order to go to the bathroom. That's a significant hike in order to get there. But regardless, the point is that he's going to have to make such a trek. And, of course, the need may come up on a Shabbos, which means that he's going to be walking this distance on Shabbos. Now, if the entire encampment of the Jewish people is viewed as a city, so then no problem. In other words, he's not violating Tchum, because Tchum doesn't start until once you leave the city perimeter, the city border. But over here, if we're saying that hut dwellers are not considered a city, and that your Tchum begins the moment you leave your tent, so now this person who is now going to be walking to the back of the camp can't make it there, because he can only go 2,000 amos, and the back of the camp is 12,000 amos. That's the Gemara's question. Answers the Gemara Amalei, Rava, Digle midbar kamar kemen dechsibu api Hashem yachnu v'api Hashem yisu keman dekviya luhu dami. The Gemara's answer is that no. the encampment of the Jewish people in the desert, that it's not considered a nomadic group. We were not viewed as just simply nomads who don't have any real stationary established residence. Our residence, even in the desert, was established. We only moved when Hashem told us to move. Since we only move by the instructions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is viewed as an established residence, and so therefore the encampment of the Jewish people is viewed as a city, and so therefore Tchum does not begin until once you leave the encampment. Amar Rav China bar Rav Kana, Amar Rav Ashi, Im Yesham, Chaseros, Shel Shnei Batim, Huk V'U. The Gemara now gives us one more halacha regarding the community of tents. If you have a nomadic group of people who are living in tents, so aside from the Jewish people, that which was the exception to the rule, so we just learned together that they do not have a tchum. In fact, they do not have a city. Their tchum, I'm sorry, they do have a tchum. Let me say that a little bit better and a little bit clearer. They do have a tchum. They don't have a city. And their tchum begins the moment they step foot out of their house. With that stated, so the Gemara now gives us one other halacha, and that's the following. Let's say that this this group of this community of people living in tents, they have a nucleus of a city. That means to say that they have three chatzeros. Each of the chatzeros has two houses flanked on the chatzeros, and then after that, it's just tents. But as long as they have a nucleus of a city, so then the rest of them is also considered a city as well. And so that means to say now that this would be an exception. Generally speaking, if all we did was just pitch tents and we had a community of tents, that would not be considered a city. But once we have a nucleus of a city, so then even the tents is going to be considered part and parcel of the city. As long as the Gemara has spoken about people living in tents and nomadic people, the Gemara is going to be making a number of critical comments regarding living in such a community. So those people who are living in huts and are nomads going through the desert, so their lives aren't lives. And the shame of name and shalahem. Their wives, their children do not belong to them. Tanya Nami Hachi, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, supporting this idea. Eliezer Ish Birya Omer Yoshei Trifim Ki Yoshei Kvarim. Living in a hut is like living in a grave. Rashi over here describes, obviously very strong language, but Rashi over here describes Ki Yoshei Kvaros Kemesim. The hut doesn't really provide for them any kind of protection from the elements, and so basically they are living in an unprotected environment. Back to the Gemara, as far as the daughters are concerned, the Braisa has a very strong description in terms of the status of their children. So my time, why such a strong statement? So Ula Amar She'in La Merchatzos. Now the Gemara's assumption over here is that their wives are going to be violated by other men. The Gemara is going to give two different explanations in terms of why that is, but that means to say then that their children do not really belong to the presumed father, but rather belongs to another father, and so therefore there is no yichus, there's no lineage over there in such a community. And the Gemara is going to give two reasons why that should be. So the first reason that it is Ula. Ula says Shein Lamer Chatzos, that there's no bathhouses in these nomadic communities. As a result of that, any of the men who wanted to go take a bath, so they would have to travel a great distance. Once they travel a great distance, it would leave their wives exposed and subject to being violated. Rav Yochanan Amar Mimneisha Margishin Ze Lazeh B'Tvila. Another explanation is because these nomadic tribes, when the women go to the mikvah, and by the way, parenthetically, it seems pretty clear over here, the Gemara is describing a Jewish nomadic community. But regardless, when they're heading out to the mikvah, so because it's so open and everyone's living in such an open environment, so other men know when the wives are going to the mikvah. And then when the wives are going to the mikvah, the other men are going to go ahead and accompany them and violate them. So my benayu ikabenayu, nara desamach lebeisis. So the Gemara says, now there's going to be a nafkamina based on these two reasons that are given. And let's say that there is a river close by to this nomadic community, to the tent community. So the river is good for tefillah, but it's not good for bathing. So as far as a woman going to the mikvah is concerned, so if that were the reason why, well, the mikvah is proximate, and they can just simply go to the mikvah and come back, and not be violated. But if the issue is the men going away, so despite the fact that there's a mikveh nearby, but it's not good for men bathing, men are still going to have to trek out in order to bathe, and so therefore leaving their wives in a vulnerable position. Okay, so the Gemara gives a nafkamina based on the two reasons given in terms of why it is that their children are not considered really their children. Amar Avuna called Yirshein by Yerik Ein Tamachacham Rashai Ladur Ba. We're approaching the end of the daf over here. We're three lines from the bottom, and the Gemara over here is just going to be speaking about a community that a Tamachacham should choose in order to live. I guess after having concluded where you should not be living in a tented community, in some sort of community only made up of tents. So the Gemara also is going to speak for just a moment about other communities that a Talmid Chacham should be weary of before moving into. If you have a community where they don't have vegetables in such a community, a Talmid Chacham should not move into that community. In other words, there should be vegetables. What's so great about vegetables? Okay, so I probably heard that question once or twice before. But anyway, Rashi over here writes, what makes vegetables so good is that they're cheap, they're filling. And if you're a Talmid Chacham and you really want to focus and concentrate on your learning, so basically, if you're living in a city where there are vegetables readily available, so you know that the cost of living is going to be significantly down. You won't have to earn a lot of money in order to make ends meet, and that's great. In other words, and then you can focus on your learning. If, however, you're living in a city where there are no vegetables, so then you're going to have to be spending a lot more money for your food. You're going to have to be earning more money. And that just simply would mean less time for you to learn. Okay, good. So so look for a city with vegetables. The Gemara says, "Lememer, you mean to tell me, Dierik Malia, that vegetables are good? V'atayim v'lantan abrisa shlosha marbin es azevel v'kofav in es akoma v'notlin echad me chamesh maor me os me maor enav shel adam." So the Gemara says, on the other hand, we have a brisa. The brisa says that three things which are not good for the GI tract, not good for your posture, and not good for your eyesight. And they are, ve'elohen, as we now turn to the top of Nun Vav Amun Aleph, pas kever v'shecha chadosh v'yerek. It comes to bread which is inferior bread, or a beer that is not fully fermented, or vegetables. They're all not good. Not good for the GI tract, not good for your posture, and not good for your eyesight. So the Gemara is a little bit stuck, because on one hand we said that vegetables are good, and a Talmid Chacham should look for a community with vegetables. And meanwhile, we just said that vegetables are not good. A stira. Lo kasher, the Gemara says, yeah, but we're resolving as we are now on the top of Nun Vav Amud Aleph. Habitume v'keti, habishar yarki. It depends on what kind of vegetables are we talking about. Are we talking about garlic and leeks? Or are we talking about the other vegetables? Which one's good and which one's bad? Take a look at Rashi on the top of the Amud over here. Rashi writes, tute v'karte lo ma'ale kach shamati. So Rashi has a mesora that the garlics and the leeks are no good. That's Rashi's mesora, but Rashi says, but the truth of the matter is, I think differently. Rashi says, "Venir be'inai tumi v'karti ma'ale." I think garlic and leeks are very good. The Hachitanya, Rashi quotes the Gemara Baba Kama, "Chamisha dvarim nemru b'shum, masbiya mashkin matzil panim marbe esazer v'horei kina shebe'me'ayim." I'm not going to go through all the details, but the Gemara Baba Kama describes how garlic is really good in kreishim, and as far as leeks are concerned, namitanya b'brachos. That Rashi quotes the Gemara b'brachos. The yafin liv ne'me'ayim is very good for the intestines. So based on Gemara's both in Baba Kama and in Brachos Rashi, against the Masorah that was given to him, Rashi says that the leeks and the garlic is really good. On the other hand, the other vegetables are not necessarily so good, and so therefore what the Talmid Chacham should be looking for is a community that has leeks and vegetables. Kiditanya. So the Gemara, we're back on the Gemara, two lines down. The Gemara quotes the Braisa, Shum Yerek Kreshin, Chatzi Yerek. When it comes to garlic is a vegetable. Leeks, a half a vegetable. Near its stone, near some chaim. If you see a radish, so that's something which is generally speaking very good. Vatanya near its stone, near some amavas. The Gemara says, okay, but I have another brisa that says that if I saw a radish, that's not good. Lokasha kam ba'alin kam mi'imahos. So the Gemara says, it depends what part of the radish you're eating. If you're eating the leaves of the radish, that's no good. If you're eating the root of the radish, that's fine. And kambiya mosachama, kambiya mosachama, and also depends on what time of the year we're describing. Winter versus the summer. The way Rashi describes it, in the summer, so the radishes are really good. Radishes cool you off. So it's good in the summertime. On the other hand, in the wintertime, where you're already cool, so you don't need the cooling effects of the radishes. In fact, just the opposite would be detrimental to you. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. We have a little bit more to go in terms of Divrei Hashkafa, but we'll pick that up in the upcoming daf. In the meantime, let's just quickly recap. The beginning of the daf today in Hamad Aleph, we went over irregular-shaped cities and the ability to extend by squaring the irregular-shaped cities. Mark quoted a Braisa. Braisa went through a half dozen scenarios of irregular-shaped cities. And in some of them we can extend, in some of them we cannot extend. And the Gemara went through each one of the cities. The Gemara spent a good amount of time on the rainbow city, city shaped like a rainbow, describing how it is that we can annex the center part of the rainbow, so that one would one only has to start counting tchum only after exiting the interior area of the rainbow. Meaning, once you're past the imaginary bowstring of the city, then and only then do you start counting tchum. Gemara goes over some of the specifics in terms of the measurements of this city, in terms of how much of the center can be annexed, how far do the two ends of the city have to be from one another in order to annex the city. We quickly introduce ourselves to the concept of Karpov today, the idea that when I have two cities that are near one another, as long as they are within a certain proximity of one another, we can view these two cities as one city. That's the idea of Karpov. That is coming up in a mission we're going to see a couple days from now. And then the Gemara spent a good amount of time describing some of the other structures that were mentioned in our Mishnah that can serve to annex a city. On the Amud Beis, the Gemara quoted a Braisa that went through a various number of buildings and edifices. Some of them can extend the city, some of them cannot extend the city. The Gemara looked for the definition of some of these items, as some of them were not clear. The Bais Shebiyam was a little bit unclear. The Gemara had to describe and explain that. Fine. And then the end of today's daf, the Gemara talked about a community made up of tents and huts. And under those circumstances, that does not have the status of a city, cannot have the status of the city. The Jewish encampment in the desert, even though it was made up of tents and huts, so that could be viewed as a city. But the Gemara says, but that's different because Pi Hashem Yachanu, they only traveled when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them to travel. But generally speaking, though, any community made up of tents is not viewed as a community. And the Tchum is going to begin once you step foot outside the door. The Gemara spent some time also discussing what should be preferable cities that should be chosen by Talmid HaChachamim in terms of setting up residence over there. A big consideration is going to be cost of living. That's what the Gemara taught us regarding the vegetables. And then the Gemara just finished up by pointing out which vegetables are considered good for us and which vegetables are not considered good for us.